This is episode 414, dated Monday, October 27th, 2025.
You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
Hi, everybody. Welcome once again to Sports Roundtable. I am Bob Renko. Great to be here today with all of you. This is episode 414, dated Monday, October 27th, 2025. Before we continue, we will be introducing our sports spelunkers to start out with. And then we have a special guest here today. We'll talk to him in a couple of minutes as well. We start out with Mitch Pomerantz.
Well, good afternoon, good evening from beautiful downtown Pasadena. Home of the soon-to-be twice World Series champion Dodgers. 71 degrees and clear here, and this is the cool before the heat wave. We're supposed to hit into the high 80s and low 90s at least tomorrow and Wednesday. But good to be on the show today and have a chance to talk to our guest.
We are in a cold snap. Well, not necessarily cold, but cooler than normal. We're in the low 50s, and we expect a whole bunch of rain later in the week, including maybe the remnants of Hurricane Melissa. As a matter of fact, our thoughts and prayers go out to those folks who live in the Caribbean and surrounding areas. They're going to get deluged with rain, and I really feel bad for those folks. We wish them all the best during these difficult times. Reverend Michael Garrett.
And welcome from Missouri City, Texas, where it is 88 degrees and clear skies, and it's very nice out there. And Bob, I echo your sentiments to the people in the Caribbean, especially in Jamaica, where they're expecting a really rough go of it with huge winds, 150 miles an hour winds.
30 inches of rain, I heard.
Yeah.
Incredible. Don Wardlow.
Hey there, from Jersey, where it's going to get colder tonight. And I tell you, when it comes to hurricanes, I had my one, and my one is plenty. And that was Hurricane Andrew in 1992. That was also a Category 5. And the girl I was dating then was right at the epicenter of where everything went bad. And she made it, but I must tell you, suspense in real life is a lot less fun than suspense in a novel.
Yes. Anyway, Luther King should be here as far as I know. Peter Altschul has been on a cruise in Mexico. He may be back today, but I'm not sure if he'll be here in time to be on Sports Roundtable. So, Peter, I hope you had a good time in Mexico. I hope you had a few tacos along the way. You know, glad you were able to get out there and enjoy yourself very much. We want to thank those people who make Sports Roundtable available to all of us. We start out with Raymond Kay, our producer. Thank you for what you do. Peter from Canada, thank you for posting our shows on the Friendship Chat service. We appreciate that. Also, our media sources, thank you very much for airing us when you do. And, of course, Jacqueline Sylvia of JS Web Solutions, thank you for airing, for archiving our shows on my website. All you have to do to find the archives is go to www.brankoevents.com, arrow down until you get to Sports Roundtable Podcast, click on those, and you will see most of our archives from latest to earliest, and merci, Jackie. I want to say hi to Trish, our facilitator. Thank you very much for helping out today. And Brad, who is our streamer. Thank you very much for streaming us today on ACB Media 5. And because you do that, I'd like to give out my email address for those people who listen, because we always depend on the opinions of the fans. We encourage people to please write to us at Sports Roundtable. We want to know what you think of the show, what you think of our discussions, and everything that goes with all of that. So it's bobbranco93@gmail.com, bobbranco93@gmail.com. Back with us for another appearance, we have Mark Kesticher with ESPN Radio. He's here once again on Sports Roundtable. Mark, welcome back. It's great to have you.
Always nice to be invited. I reached into my closet and I'm stitching myself together a five-timer jacket, much like Saturday Night Live. I think this is my fifth time. Could be more. Either way, I'm calling it five.
I've been listening to baseball playoffs on ESPN Radio. Your crew does a great job. Jessica and Eduardo. And off the top of my head, I can't think of the other gentleman, but I've heard you once doing trivia, Mark. You asked a Freddie Freeman question when you were in the studio. Yes.
I did. John Shambi is our lead play-by-play for World Series, the voice of the Cubs. I was fortunate to do six broadcasts. I did two a week for the first three rounds and apparently did so well they didn't ask me back for the World Series, but that's okay. I didn't take any affront to it because we are busy with NBA and college football. But yeah, they do have a trivia portion of the game of the broadcast. And it's one of the first things we talk about in our meetings is if the producer brings a really good trivia question, I don't even bother pitching mine. But they were so overcome with all the games they were doing. I think I was 6 for 6. Every question I wanted made the air. Either that or they liked the fact that I brought in pizzas for everybody to eat before each broadcast. One or the other. Not sure which.
Excellent. So let's start with the NBA because things have gone haywire in the NBA. I don't have to explain to too many people why that is. We only have 1 hour. But what are your thoughts, Mark, on the developments with Terry Rozier and Chauncey Billups and all this gambling and the mafias involved? And there might be other people involved in this scandal now, I'm hearing. What is the impact supposedly going to be, in your opinion, on the NBA moving forward?
Well, it's a good question because we've known this now. I think it's been about a week, right? And I remember my initial reaction. I was on a talk show from my hometown of Albany, New York, and it was breaking news as we were talking. And, you know, as best as I could compute in the moment, I said, well, the first thing I'm thinking is we have two separate issues going on. We have one issue, which is not the mafia issue, but it's the issue of betting, especially prop betting. And that's been something that I think we've been talking about across sports, especially with the proliferation of legalized gambling and gambling websites. And we know ESPN Bet It, my own shop, is involved with it. And, you know, we've had many different symposiums with different leagues. The NBA, Adam Silver, who was asked about this, this is, you know, years ago, about, you know, gambling coming in. And his biggest contention, I'm paraphrasing, was that it was going on illegally beforehand. Now we want to, you know, be able to make sure, you know, we're out in front of the legalization. And those are the red flags and the watch groups that are, you know, that flagged Terry Rozier that saw some abnormalities out there in gambling. And so, you know, you'd like to think in this day and age, as opposed to the point shaving scandals of half a century ago, when, you know, professional players, you know, had full-time jobs in the off season to make ends meet. Now guys make enough money, they wouldn't have to resort to this or even dabble in it or not even realize. I'm assuming in Terry Rozier's case, I'm assuming he was helping out some buddies or friends or whatever. So it's a long way to say, I think there's two issues here. One is the gambling aspect. How do we stay on top of that better? The Chauncey Billups aspect, I think, you know, caught me completely by surprise. He was a colleague, you know, worked at ESPN. I've known him as a player, as a colleague, and as a head coach, and have great respect for him. So I don't know what he got involved with or allegedly got involved with, and, you know, we'll find out. But that's, boy, that's just, if it's true what's been accused, then he just got himself involved in a, you know, a web of gambling that you can't foresee as a league, legalized gambling or not. So it's incredibly complex. The NBA right now is forefront at it, but all the professional leagues and even the collegiate ranks, which ironically just last week announced that, you know, legalized gambling, you know, for athletes and coaches, et cetera, is to make sure the guardrails are there, that, you know, we keep the integrity of the game. That's the most important thing.
You think this is the tip of the iceberg?
I'd like to think so. I'm always, you know, on the side of thinking the best of everybody, but, you know, I think if it isn't the tip, then it's certainly, you know, the giant red flag for everybody to realize this is a career ender, you know, and look at Malik Beasley, who got caught up in this from the Pistons as a free agent And it turned out he got cleared, and he's got no chance to sign a contract like he would have if he hadn't got held up in that. And who knows if he's not a guy who's sweating at night wondering if the FBI is going to knock on his door at 6 a.m. at some point. So
he didn't play yesterday against the Celtics.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know if it's the tip of the iceberg, but it certainly is generating gargantuan headlines that you would think millionaire athletes, ex-athletes, coaches, etc., you know, would not get involved with anything like this.
Mark, if it's okay, I'd like to.
Sorry. Go ahead,
Don. Yeah, if it's okay, I would like to ask a question. I may sound ignorant, but now 30 years ago, most gambling except for casinos was outlawed. And when I caught my partner gambling week after week after week, I said to him, buddy, you're going to end up in somebody's trunk if you keep up doing this, what you're doing. Now, 30 years later, how can these leagues, with their right hand, take money from Bet365 and other betting companies I won't even name because I don't know them all, and then with their left hand, smack somebody for gambling? Isn't it all gambling legal or all gambling illegal? Isn't it one way or the other?
Yeah, that's been a real difficult thing for me as well. Don, I'm kind of on you. I'm in your corner. I understand what they're saying about legalized gambling. And you would think that, and this has not been an instance where people are gambling on the outcome of games per se. The prop bets are different. That's, you know, I'm going to get 5 rebounds and after my 4th, oh, my foot hurts. And now I'm not playing the rest of the game. You know, that's the shady side there that we need to work. I'm with you. I'm a dinosaur. I'm not saying you are. I'm a dinosaur. And when it was posted in the baseball clubhouse, when you walked in, no gambling, that's what it meant. No gambling. And we saw many players of great, you know, reputation lose theirs because of that. And so now we've blurred that line. And I'll just add this anecdote to it. When I go to a sporting event, whether it's a golf event here in Connecticut or, you know, going to a football game, it's amazing to me, and maybe I need to get up with the times, how many of the younger generation, that's just part of what they do now. They have their phone, they make their bets. Hey, I need Rory to, you know, shoot under 68 today, and that's why he's there, because he wants to see Rory shoot a 67. So at the end of the day, not only to have fun at the golf course, he's going to make some money. And that's...
I'm a dino. I don't even know what a prop bet is.
Yeah, a prop bet basically is, and I only knew it from the Super Bowl in the old days to get my wife and daughter interested in watching the game with me. Who's going to score the first touchdown? Will they score more than 20 points? You know, these little questions you can bet on, and they call them prop bets. They have bets, I didn't even know this till 5 years ago, called first to 15. It's a basketball bet. And it has nothing to do with the outcome of the game. It's just which team will cross 15 points first before the other. Like, that's a bet you can do. Now, that's a hard one to, you know, mess around with if you're going to, you know, do any kind of betting scandal. But the prop bets are easier because there's a number that's set. It's like an over-under in any football and basketball game. I don't know. I think they do it with baseball too, with runs. And so let's say World Series tonight. I don't know what the over-under is, but let's say it's 10, you know, and you think it's going to be a well-pitched game between Glasnow and Scherzer. That, like, there's no way these two teams are going to combine for 10 runs. So you're going to bet the under, and that's technically a prop bet, but those are bets you can control. None more bigger than in games like basketball, where you don't have to try for a rebound and that will set your number. Harder to do that in other aspects, but I think that's where we run into a lot of trouble. How many minutes am I going to play? How many rebounds am I going to get? How many points? Basketball's always been a sport that has, you know, led to the possibility of shaving in some way, whether it was point shaving or whatever. And so that's kind of morphed into prop betting, which has become very popular, especially for people who don't care who wins the game. They're just looking at a number. And now you get somebody on the inside who can control that number. That's where the trouble begins.
You know, what doesn't help either, Mark, is that you have betting networks now doing sporting events, betting networks.
Yeah. We have, I think, what saved a lot of the local RSN, the regional sports networks, was FanDuel. So a lot of these games are on, like, the Phoenix Suns FanDuel network. You know, it's, that's, they're driving, you know, they're not producing at FanDuel, but they are paying the freight on a lot of these stations. So the lines have been so blurred, and we need to hope. Maybe that's a bad word. We need the players and the coaches who make up the games to have enough honesty to do it right. And the problem is 99.whatever% do it right and stay away. And then there's that less than 1% or less than 0.5%, whatever the number is. It's probably 0.001 because we got three guys who just got pinched in this last one out of how many hundreds and thousands of athletes. And all it takes is one or two or three to flare a headline like this.
Don, prop is short for proposition. That's what they're talking about. And, you know, Adam Silver's excuse, we want to get ahead of it. When the NBA conducted their investigation about Terry Rozier, they couldn't even do a decent job getting information. They found insufficient evidence to suspend him or get him out of the league. So I think Silver's it's a lame excuse, and I think that they may find that there are more players involved in this, and I think it's going to hurt basketball. I heard some comment the other day that, you know, the folks who follow NBA, who follow any of the professional sports leagues, they follow their teams and they follow the league because they believe ultimately that the players are going to do their best to win. And, you know, as was the case with Damon Jones, who was an assistant with the Lakers at the time, he was passing along information as to whether LeBron was going to play or not. And obviously, you know, this was what, 4 or 5 years ago, when LeBron was still pretty much at the top of his game. Any game that he didn't play, the chances were reduced that the Lakers would win. So I think the NBA is making a mistake, and it's going to come back to bite them, I think.
Mitch, I'm glad you told me what proposition betting was. I'm way out of gambling. And, you know, the only proposition I like is the kind I'm too old to make.
I'm glad you knew it as well, because I only knew prop bet. I'm so out of that game. And I have, you know, studio hosts and other announcers I work with that are far more familiar with it. I always kind of shy away from bet talk because I just don't understand it, and I try not to do it. Except to get my wife and daughter to watch the Super Bowl with me. That I'm really leading on that one.
I used to play the one-armed bandits. I like those, but I got out of that in 2000 before my wife could leave me over that. She had to leave me over something else.
Michael, you were going to say something?
Yeah. So Mark, you brought up a subject as a part of this whole deal from the collegiate ranks, and they've been allowed to bet on pro sports. Do you think that this could sort of corrupt the younger people as they get into pro sports and get caught up in that? I know there were a couple of guys, I think they were wide receivers or a couple of guys for Detroit Lions. When they came out of college, they were tapped for betting. So is there some sort of corruption to these kids, you think, or are they already doing it them anyway?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like I was saying, with that generation, that it's, you know, it's so much a part of life now that maybe the powers that be figured, why should we, you know, penalize them just because they're college athletes? But it only, I guess, I haven't read deeply into it. So if it is only professional sports they can bet on, then obviously they can't affect an outcome of anything they're in. But your point is good, is anytime you crack that window open of possibility, whether they walk through it or somebody walks toward them, you know, to, you know, try to manipulate things, I think anytime you open that window, there's always that possibility. I was a little surprised. I hadn't followed that story. So when I saw the headline, especially it was odd that it happened last week. That's just bad timing. You know, when we have this major issue with, you know, gambling and then, oh, by the way, the NCAA approves gambling. Just bad timing on that part. So I think anytime you open a window, the possibility is greater. But again, the flaw of me is I always give people the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to do that even with college athletes and folks of that age who I always, you know, say, you haven't learned yet. You don't know enough. But, you know, if you're 18 and, you know, you could go fight in the military, and 3 years after that, if you are allowed to drink alcohol, I guess at some point you should be able to make the right decisions if you decide gambling or wagering, whatever you want to call it, is what you want to do. But I see your point completely. And could it lead to something? Yes, of course it could. But if that's what, you know, folks want to spend some of their time on and spend their hard-earned money or hard-earned NIL money, I guess now they can do it. But hopefully they'll stay away from the wrong people.
Mark, I think the problem, though, with opening it up to college-age athletes is this. Probably 15 years ago, before it was as widespread as it is now, I decided, a friend of mine told me about a sports book, and it was probably in the Caribbean, I don't remember now, and I said, okay, here's the money, I'm going to allocate a certain amount of money, and I was doing it for football, for NFL games. And I said, okay, here's the amount I'm willing to lose. And it took me a season and a half to lose it. And when the money was gone, I said, okay, I'm done. And I've never put down that kind of bet again. But yep. you got a kid who's 19, 20, 21 years old. How likely is it that they're going to have the self-control and the self-awareness to say, well, I guess I'm not as good a gambler as I thought I was, and that's all I'm going to do.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point, and it's not only young people. I even see people, you know, my age. You know, I enjoy every once in a while going into a casino when we're on the road just to have fun with, you know, some yep. folks. And the one thing, I'm like you, like, here's my $100, and that's it. And I yep. that's all I'm spending. And you see people go to the ATM over and over that are
yep.
sitting at the same blackjack table I'm sitting with, and I just kind of, you know, hey, it's your money. I hope you yep. have enough to cover this, but that's the thing with gambling. And that's what we all, I think, I don't want to speak for all of us, but I know in my family that there were gambling issues a couple of generations prior, those who had just come to America. And so I remember hearing about, you know, the uncle who, you know, lost all his money. And so that became kind of the tale that was told to stay away from gambling. And so it sticks with you at this later age. Now that you see it just be part of regular life. And it's hard for me to still kind of wrap my arms around it, even though it's all around me, not only in the sports we watch, sports we listen to, or for my case, the sports we broadcast, where there might be a card you have to read that says ESPN bet on it. And, you know, I may not be condoning it, but it's part of business. And so it's hard for me to grasp. And you're right. Not only would it be hard at that age to hold back, but if you are making oodles of money as a college athlete and you really just, I mean, we're not even talking gambling now. This is a conversation that comes up, you know, with my colleagues all the time when we walk out of a football practice facility and the first five cars I see are all $200,000 and up. I think to myself, if you gave me $1 million at age 18, how is there any way that I would be able to have a normal life without losing all that money, blowing all that money, not understanding the value of money? And so it's a whole nother conversation on that end. That generation, whatever they're called, generation, millennial, I've lost track of what generation we're on. Gen X, I think.
Gen Z.
Gen Z. I don't know how, you know, how they're all going to function with the forward, but they're probably look at me as, you know, the old dinosaur who, you know, doesn't understand betting and wants nothing to do with it.
Mark, if I could take one brief second off topic. You did mention your background very briefly. The name Kestisher is, in fact, quite unusual. What nationality is that, if it's all right? If it's not, yep, you can tell me to get lost.
It's so unusual that I've never met another one, though when the internet hit in the mid 90s, that's when I started looking for other Kestishers. And I actually found them in the United Kingdom and in Australia, far flung. It's my grandfather on my father's side, immigrated from Poland. He used to tell me, and this was in 1923, that depending on the day of the week, it was Poland or it was Austria. You know, the border kept changing depending on who was in charge of that town. So it's Eastern European, it's Jewish. And so like many of Eastern Europe of that era, and when everybody fled, they went to all corners of the earth. And in some cases, in the United States, I found one relative whose last name was K-A-Y-E. When they got to Ellis Island, they didn't want to have a name like Kestishire. They thought it was, you know, going to be too much of a symbol of someone who wasn't from there. So it's a long way to say that I haven't heard anyone broadcast with it. There is a woman named Natalie Kestishire in Australia who does radio documentaries for ABC. I don't know if it's Australian Broadcasting Company it would stand for, but that's the only media person that I have found in the last 20, 25 years with that last name.
That's a cool
Mark,
search.
Mark, for your edification, my grandparents are from that part of Poland that was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Yes.
Poland was part of that, and the southwestern portion was also the Jewish portion of that nation. So they're probably from somewhere close to where my grandparents came from.
Yeah, I think it was called Lancut, L-A-N-C-U-T. My grandfather on my father's side was already 68 when I was born. So by the time, you know, we started having adult conversations, he was in his 80s and couldn't remember what he had for lunch. But anything before 1939 was like encyclopedic. He didn't even know I was his grandson. He didn't know my father was his son because his memory doesn't recall, you know, having children. But once I figured out how encyclopedic his knowledge was, I wrote books worth of where he came from, who his dad was, who his grandfather was, where he worked, etc. And in later years, well past his death, everything was right. I mean, he had all the history right. And it was, I have no idea why I just went off on that tangent, but I know what it was. But basically, like the Jewish temple that my family went to in the latter part of the 19th century and probably before that still exists today. Even though the Nazis obliterated everything, they left a lot of the stuff and used it for something else. It was a general store from what I was told from 1942 on. And so that was one of the goals that I never got to do and haven't yet. My father is 83, doesn't get around as well as he used to. Like 20 years ago, I wanted to go on a trip to Poland and go find that town and go find that temple. And there's, you know, there's still actually rolls, you know, of names just from taking censuses back then. So that would have been a great trip and still could be for me. Great. It's great history.
I wanted to switch gears to the World Series. As we all know, Dodgers and Blue Jays are tied one apiece. And I still maintain the Dodgers will win it. They have excellent, excellent starting pitching. Their pitching is pitching like old school starters have pitched as I was growing up. I mean, Yamamoto's out of this world. Snell's been excellent. Sasaki, all of a sudden, who was a starter because of all the depth, he's now in the pen. He's doing a great job. Too bad about what happened Friday night, though, when the Blue Jays scored 9 runs in the 6th inning because they wanted to take out, was it, who pitched that game? Was it Snell?
They took Snell out because he really had been struggling, and they brought in Bonda, who got shellacked. And part of the problem with that game, and it's a function of the days off, but when you have a relief pitcher who's used to pitching, if not every day, certainly every other day, some of the Dodger relief pitchers, because of the previous series, hadn't pitched for a week, and it's hard to maintain your command, let alone your control of the strike zone. So, you know, that's what happened Friday night. And my concern as a Dodger fan is that, again, we've got with Yamamoto doing a complete game Saturday, tonight, tomorrow, and Glasnow doesn't have the pinpoint control that Yamamoto has, that Snell has, even Ohtani has. And so tonight is going to be real interesting because we'll know within the first three innings whether the bullpen's going to get a lot of use or not, because Toronto is hitting the ball the way I thought the Brewers would. I thought the Brewers would not expand the strike zone and would be a lot more selective. Well, Toronto's playing that kind of ball.
Toronto's been doing that all season.
Yeah, and so that's, I think we'll win the series, but it's not going to be easy.
No.
And we'll go as far as our starting pitching takes us.
What are your thoughts, Mark? Hi, Luther, by the way.
Hey, guys.
Mark, what are your thoughts right now?
And hello, Luther, as well. This is a hard one for me as the son of the American League East to root for the Blue Jays and to watch a Dodger team that took us out last year. And of course, my grandparents were from Brooklyn. And so
I know that had to be painful.
Always me against them. Although we tended to win most of I had 77 and 78 as a child. They had 81, but I am kind of pulling for the Blue Jays because, Dan Shulman is a good friend. And I remember a couple of years ago, we did a Raptors play-in game in Toronto. He had a Blue Jays game across the street and we all went to dinner afterwards. And he had told me that his son Ben, because they were still in the middle of COVID protocols, the Blue Jays weren't traveling their announcers. He was asked to do 20 games that summer to fill in. And he would call them from the studio with the Blue Jays on the road. And here you fast forward, I think it's 3 years.
Yeah,
Ben is the lead voice of the Blue Jays on radio.
Sure is.
And gets
on TV.
World Series on TV because he does it for the Canadian network. And so it's a father-son team, both for the Blue Jays, both calling play-by-play, which is amazingly cool. So that's a long way to say I think I'm rooting for Toronto. I had no clue that Max Scherzer could still get the ball to home plate effectively like he did earlier in the playoffs. I don't know if he could do that again, especially against this Dodgers lineup, but I am thrilled that unlike Friday and unlike Saturday, I can just be a fan the next three nights. Friday, I was in Baton Rouge getting ready for LSU. We had meetings.
Speaking, kind of
half paying attention. Then Saturday's game was literally happening at the same time. Happening at the same time as my LSU game.
Mark, the reason I'm a Dodgers fan is my father was from Brooklyn. My mother was from the Bronx. But he was the baseball fan. So I'm a Dodger fan as a result of my father being from Brooklyn.
Well, I lost a lot of bets. I had to like buy a hat for a friend who's a Dodgers fan. I had to buy a jersey for somebody else. I was all in. I didn't care who was playing and who was pitching. I was like, I don't know if I believe the Yankees could win, but they know I'm a soft bet on that end. So I think I have to win Toronto based on the fact that I lost so much money in buying apparel last fall.
Do I have time to work in my treat?
No.
Bob, have I got time to work in my piece?
Go ahead, Don. Explain what's going to happen so that we can all understand what you're going
to do. First, I'm going to have to make a couple of sounds with my computer. You will. A little joyous because I can't help it. Half a second.
Don is going to play the final call of Yamamoto's game in Japanese.
Oh, word.
This ought to be fun to listen
to.
The
one thing that you will know is they do the
participants can now see your screen.
How do I say this? Last name first and the first name last in the Japanese broadcast, which we don't do on this side of the Pacific. So here is what I believe to be a Japanese television call, strictly because of the silence in between the crack of the bat and the action. Here we go.
打ち上げた。サード、マンシー。スリーアウト、試合終了。山本由伸、2試合連続、ポストシーズン完投勝利。ロジャーズセンターが静かになります。見事な投球でした。 一勝一敗のタイに戻して、あさってからホーム、ドジャースタジアムでの3連戦と。
What's his name, Don?
I honestly don't know. That's something the MLB didn't share.
That sounds like something that they would do in soccer coverage too. Because I think I've heard some soccer coverage like that.
That's pretty cool. I spent a little bit of time in Korea in 2018 and I got to wake up, you know, 9:10 in the morning and they would always show an MLB game because of the proliferation of South Koreans that are in Major League Baseball. And so it was fun to watch it from that side. I think there were some very famous South Korean NBA finals calls. Whoever their announcer was, way over the top, which was awesome.
Of course.
And then, of course, last name, first name. I remember Yao Ming. His last name was Yao. So we didn't know that. We're just presented as Yao Ming. You figure his first name is Yao, but
Now, Mark, you had just discussed the LSU Texas A&M game. Did you have an inkling that basically Brian Kelly was basically on a ban appeal, in your opinion?
Funny you say that, because we were in his office on Friday and, you know, everything seemed normal, but I will say I got there Thursday night. So I was there all day Friday, all day Saturday, and every LSU fan I came in contact with, this is before the game, was like, Brian Kelly better win this game. Brian Kelly's got to go. I mean, the fan base had turned on him.
Of course they did.
The athletic director hired him and obviously still had $53 million to pay him. And so if you had asked us off the air, and I actually brought it up, the feeling was he's probably going to finish the year and they'll take a look at it after this year. But we're in a different time, ladies and gentlemen. $50 million cutting a check is not a big deal anymore, apparently, because we have 10 firings and at least two guys that are earning around $50 million to walk
and
away.
I'm letting you know now, Auburn, how much longer does Hugh Freeze have and how much longer does Shane Beamer at South Carolina and Mark Stoops at Kentucky? So
and Belichick.
It's become like a video game almost. Cut him loose. Now my question is, who's going to replace them? There's only one Lane Kiffin out there. There are some really good young coaches, but you've got 10 coaching jobs open right now. And you're right.
It could be 13, could be 14.
There's going to be more.
So it brings up the point, Michael, about Steve Sarkisian and that story that got out that he's denied. And where does that stand?
Well, he denies it, and we're playing. Yeah, we came back to beat Kentucky, but he's
and y'all almost lost Mississippi State last week.
Well, yeah, both. I meant Mississippi State.
Yeah,
but what's interesting is, you know, I look at recruiting and problems that the team has. The offensive line is terrible. And now this week, Garcia's going to be out because he had a concussion. I don't think he's going to play. So his seat is warming up.
Well, here's another question though. Doesn't this kind of remind you of when Nick Saban was, what was it, at Miami, and he says he wasn't going to take the Alabama job in 2006 or whenever it was? If Coach Sark is saying he's denying going to the pros, unless there is a job that he really has his eye on, I don't know if he's going to be going anywhere, to be honest with you. Unless he has a job that he really has his eyeballs on, I don't know if he's going to go anywhere unless a team makes him an offer that he cannot refuse. But I highly doubt that.
I do too, because he won't go for the pay because he's got a nice big fat paycheck.
He's got a nice contract
to 2031.
Oh yeah.
So we have about another 20 minutes. So if anybody would like to raise their hand and ask our guest, Mark Kessicher of ESPN Radio, questions pertaining to the wide world of sports, This is your opportunity to do so here on Sports Roundtable. So without further ado, let me ask Trish if anybody would like to speak to Martin. Or the rest of us, for that matter.
And why would they want to do that? Come on.
But Mark, while we're waiting on that, I do wonder something, though. Because I remember, I think you and I had emailed you this story, and everybody, including the whole nation, was talking about the NBA story of the weekend that still is being talked about, investigated, and so on and so forth. Where do you think Adam Silver and the NBA can go to put more protections and more guardrails in place to not have to deal with getting egg on their face with what they're dealing with now?
Yeah, and so, you know, I think we did like a solid 10 minutes right off the top. That's where we started. We did a lot of that talk, but I'll boil it down for you. I think, you know, the thing that caught them the most, the Chauncey Billups thing was a big surprise. I mean, I didn't see that one coming. I don't know how you guardrail that one. That's just, you gotta hope that your membership, and again, innocent until proven guilty, you don't go down that path of gambling and mafia, et cetera. I think Adam said this, the prop betting has been a big issue, and that's more than just the NBA. That's all over the place, especially when we saw Jonte, I think was his first name, Jonte Porter. Porter, who is Michael Porter's little brother.
Who's banned.
Playing, on a G League contract. And so now you're dealing with, you know, guys that aren't making the big, big money, and that you might be open more to doing something illicit. So they got to find the guardrails on that, especially with two-way players. I think the league would love to see the prop betting go away, as far as part of, you know, the legalized portion of gambling. So it's a very messy, murky issue. I think I told everybody who's listening here that, you know, I've never really embraced gambling, you know, as more of an old dinosaur, and not because I don't think it, you know, I'm going to turn my nose up at it and say, you know, it's the work of the devil or anything. I'm just, it's not something that doesn't interest me, because I generally, and my wife would attest to this, if I say something, go opposite. You know, if you ask me, pick red or green, whatever color I pick, the other one's going to come up. Which line do we go in at the grocery store? I think we should go in line 9. Well, that means line 9 is going to be super long and line 10 is going to go fast. So I generally stay away from the gambling aspect because I stink at it. But I do think the line is so blurred. I don't know where we go. I don't think you completely get out of it because you want to have some say in it. But I think we find, where's the weak link? And I think in the aspect of Jonte Porter, and it sounds like Terry Rozier, you know, where
I think that's the biggest one that got him. I think when they thought that he was clean, they thought he was fine. And then when this came out, him and, you know, with Billups, we don't know how far this goes. Are they small fishes in a bigger pond?
Right. And there's always,
don't know that.
The big headlines, we all know when you read the headlines, you also want to read the story.
Oh, sure.
Sometimes the headline's misleading. And I don't know if those three guys, Damon Jones, I think was the third former.
Yeah, club, I think he was.
You know, was it slap on the wrist kind of thing? And the other 31 guys are the big deal. You know, I don't know.
I don't know either.
You know, we'll find out. You know, we'll watch the wheels of justice turn slowly on this one. But either way, like in the case of Malik Beasley, you know, once your name's out there and it's dragged through the mud, I can imagine it is almost impossible to clean up your image because you're always.
I know. I mean, when you're in the public eye like that, I mean, with Don doing his broadcast thing, with, you know, most of us that have done broadcast or some semblance of it, once you're in the public eye and you do something, it's going to get out.
Yeah.
Whether you want it to or not.
And if you didn't do it and it got out on this kind of scale, it's hard to wipe the stink away.
It's hard to get your rep back because your rep's already gone.
It is, especially on that level. Like I can't even imagine. I really can't. It was an unfortunate day. It's a dark stain on the sport. You know, we'll wait and we'll see guilty or innocence on all parties. But in the meantime, we are all left to discuss this and figure out in this era of legalized gambling, how do we make it better? I'm hard enough to know the answer.
Doesn't this almost feel like when the NBA had the 1980s drug problem? Doesn't this almost kind of feel like that when we had Len Bias, who passed away when he was on the Celtics in 86?
You know,
doesn't this kind of feel close to that? I mean, you know, Bob can probably attest to this when, you know, Len Bias was on the Celtics and then we found out that he had passed
away. We just drafted him and he passed away within the week, I believe.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I have to remember all the circumstances, but obviously, you know, drug use, I guess, has not been legalized. I think maybe the culture of the 70s NBA, you know, was different in that it was all very common, you know, that, you know, folks were using illegal drugs and in some respect that got cleaned up, you know, with David Stern coming in and
the late great.
Yeah, famously,
rest soul.
I forget what finals it was, 79 or 80, whatever was on tape delay on CBS. Like,
yep.
You know, it just wasn't a popular league. And then, of course, you know, two guys, you know, at that point,
Larry
Bird and Magic Johnson come in. And then after that, you know, Michael Jordan, the rest is history. But, you know, you're right. I didn't think of that at the time. So it didn't really register with me, but there are.
I'm just trying to figure out, like, what is the, you know, comparison story?
Because, I mean, 1919, probably Black Sox, you know,
probably
almost apples for apples on that one. Sure. And that became the, you know, no gambling. You will be gone forever. And guys still aren't in the Hall of Fame. Still looking to get in.
The go Black Sox.
Barmish, do we have any hand breaks at this time? Trish, I'm sorry.
We do not.
Okay, just interrupt us when you see one.
I will.
Mike, what were you going to say?
Go ahead, guys.
Rev, which one were you thinking?
No, I was just saying it is time for our guests. We're getting close.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
But I wonder, you know, like with the Trailblazers using Diago Splitter, former San Antonio Spurs big man in the middle, now getting the interim job. Do you think this is going to be something that is, you know, if they do decide to, you know, make a change at the head coaching position for Portland to try to get these young kids to, you know, step up and play the way they're supposed to play that they've drafted, where do you think they go if they don't decide to keep Tiago Splitter? Who do you think they would go? Who do you think they would, you know, chase after as their next head coach if they were to go another direction?
That's a good question. I don't know is the answer, because I think by the time they make that decision, we could have, you know, some more coaches that are available. I think the biggest of your point that I completely agree with is it feels like it's going to stunt the growth. Portland was a fun team to watch last year. Mm-hmm. They didn't necessarily show it in wins and losses, but they looked like a team that was, you know, Houston a couple of years ago, where you're like, you know what? Give those guys a couple of years. Sure. And, you know, they're going to be maybe not contender, but certainly a contender to make the postseason. So that kind of takes all that momentum you would think away, but we'll give Tiago a chance here. And I, to be honest with you, I didn't even know he was that seriously interested in coaching. And now he is seriously the head coach of the Portland Trailblazers. So all they can hope is to be the next San Antonio Spurs, because I know everybody's only played three games so far. It's been a week, not even. We opened on Tuesday.
Speaking of Spurs, what has gotten into...
To me, that's the big story in the early season. Yeah, with Wemby.
What in the world? My goodness, he put up a 40-piece in Dallas, and then he follows it up with what, 30-something on Friday, and then he did it again yesterday?
And it's not even...
It's not even fair.
It's not even the final tally in his points. It's how he's playing. I mean,
no kidding.
He's, you know, crossing over one way, cross the other way, step back
threes,
quick plays,
jumping
seat up in the air. So he's kind of turned into that unicorn we all kind of threw way too much too soon words at and said, this is going to be the next great thing. And then, you know, we see him at summer league. We see him early in the season of his rookie year and we're like,
He got injured last year.
And that really hurt him.
And that's the big thing. Yeah. The fact that he so far has come back from that without, you know, any issue. Been fun to watch. I don't know if it's going to hold up for a whole season. We'll see. That's kind of the fun part of the new season.
Here's my question though. And this is a big can, the guys that they have continue to gel with the De'Aaron Foxes of the world, with the Castles, along with Wimby, to get back to the NBA playoffs. And
you know, Luke Kornet was a nice backup.
Oh yeah. Luke Kornet's, I mean, he's probably not going to get much playing time, but just, you know, that veteran leadership that he Kornet, would have.
Harrison Barnes, you know, those are really good older guys that can lead the way, but you got Wemby. I love Steph Castle.
And their new head coach that they got
By the way, Mark, you mentioned the Houston Rockets. I can't wait until the Celtics play them. I think it's in another week or so.
Well, you're
going to have the Midgets versus the Giants on that court. It's going to be fun.
Hey, Bob, here's the thing. Can the Celtics find a win first? They're 0-3, aren't they?
That was too hurtful there. You just heard him.
Middle of the road.
No, I'm just asking, like, you would have thought out of the first three games they would have had, they would have at least gotten two of them, right?
Well, they could have had Philly, that one.
That was the big one that got away.
Their rookie, Edgecombe, he had quite a game against us. Is he the real deal, Mark?
Yes, from what I hear. I mean, we didn't see him at Summer League. He was injured. Yes, he's a great athlete. To me, that's one of the great young,
that's one of the steals, I think. Yeah.
I remember at Summer League thinking, just looking at Philly coming into the year and saying, well, you know, if Embiid stays healthy and if Paul George stays healthy
and Maxey,
he's back, like no one's talking about the Sixers. At the very least, they're a 40 to 50 win team. And now in 1 week's time, I'm like, all right, you got VJ Edgecombe. You've got the kid from Duke who hasn't even played yet, McLean. Got hurt last year early and, you know, so all of a sudden, and Maxey, you know, who's still young, you're like, okay, I'm looking at Philadelphia from a young,
like maybe
perspective, maybe, but yeah,
they may have something.
They got this kid Barlow.
Oh,
I'm telling you, they're a good team, but to get back to your original point, that was my opening game last week was Houston at Oklahoma City for the,
that was a, cl- that was, oh my
Houston
Lord.
Is a humongous basketball.
Amen Thompson at 6'7" is your point guard and everybody else is 6'11" and up. They are.
Well, I caught the back end of that Thunder Rockets game and I'm like, man, if this is the way the NBA is going to be going all season, sign me up, please.
Oh yeah. And
the impressive thing about that game was the Thunder played almost all of their bench.
Of course, they had to.
And then at the end of the game, where the Rockets were ahead in regulation, and they just sort of couldn't hit a shot.
And Michael
tied the game up, and they went to two overtimes.
And then SGA does what SGA does.
Yeah,
he's one of those, how can I say this? If I had to do the comp thing, he is kind of the younger version of Steph Curry, just with a little bit more, you know, rip your heart out and basically show it to you. That's what SGA kind of really reminds me of, because Steph Curry does it. He still does, but SGA, I don't know if you agree with this, Mark, but I think if we get a Warriors Thunder matchup somewhere down the line, that's going to be a key matchup. SGA on SGA v Curry.
The thing with Gilgeous Alexander is it's amazing he doesn't score 80 points a game because he can't even guard it. He bumps you off, first of all, which drives the opposing coaches crazy.
Crazy.
And then he falls back and, you know, from 15 feet out anywhere, he's like, he's money. It was shocking to me. He only had 11 points for three quarters, but he carried them in the fourth and the two overtimes. He's a lot of fun to watch, but if you're a Thunder fan, if you're not, good luck.
By the way, we have about 2 minutes to go. I'm sorry, Mitch. I was going to bring up the NFL time for a couple of minutes, but go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it was pretty impressive last night, and I didn't catch most of it because I was listening to the football game. But with eight players, the Lakers went into Sacramento and beat beat the Kings, and Austin Reeves, who's pretty good third man, but last night he was number one, scored 51 points and beat Sacramento, a team that the Lakers have typically had problems with the last years.
No LeBron and no Luka.
The Sacramento teams, to me, I don't know if you agree with this, Mark. I know we're running out of time, but where are the Kings? Because they led opening night, you know, what was it, Wednesday or Thursday at Phoenix for a long stretch. They were up by 20. And then all of a sudden, it's like they couldn't defend, they couldn't shoot, they kept turning the ball over, and it's like, where is this Sacramento Kings team? Because they still have young talent, but it just seems like either it's not gelling or something, or the messaging isn't getting through, but something doesn't feel right with this team yet. I know they still have some guys still hurt, but
I know we're short on time, so I'll keep it to 15 seconds or so, but they have DeRozan and LaVine. They have Schroeder, Simone, Westbrook's. I mean, they have a lot of name guys. Austin Reeves wasn't even drafted. He's turned himself into a money third player. I never thought I'd see the day where he scored 50. He almost had 50. A 51-point triple-double. He needed one more assist.
Right.
But the Kings are that team that just kind of sits there, and you're like, they could be good, or they could be spectacularly bad.
Bad, yeah. And it's like, it just feels like something's off. But once they get Sabonis back and maybe a few of the other guys back, maybe those some more of those roles will be defined, and they can actually start playing well.
2 minutes.
They have great fans there, so I wish that for them.
No kidding.
The NFL, are the Patriots for real all of a sudden? If you would have asked me a month and a half ago, I would have said, forget about the Patriots. And they have really emerged into something.
I think they are legit.
Drake May is the man.
Look at what they did in Buffalo. I mean, what was it? About 3 weeks ago, I would have said, and Mark, you probably may agree with this, there's no way New England goes in there and beats Buffalo.
Oh, absolutely.
That was the energizer for me. That was the energizing game for me when they beat Buffalo.
Yeah. By the way, Bob, I could have gone this whole program without talking about the NFL because I got knocked out of my survivor pool yesterday.
Thanks to the Falcons.
The Falcons.
Who would have thought the Dolphins would go into Atlanta?
The fishies of all teams.
Yeah, I know. That's incredible.
Dolphins and the Jets.
I am out of my survivor pool. Thank you, Atlanta Falcons.
I was going to say,
of two surprising scores, that one and the Jets beating Cincinnati.
I didn't see that one coming because, I mean, they were up like, what, four? They were up 15, right? And then all of a sudden, it's like, wait, no, 14. I'm like, wait a minute.
We are out of time, gentlemen. Mark Kestacher, it's always a pleasure having you with us here on Sports Roundtable. It was a very informative conversation, as always.
Thanks, good luck in the future
with what you do for ESPN Radio, and I will continue to listen to World Series games on that forum, and we'll have you back in the near future, I'm sure. Thanks, everybody.
My bosses would be happy.
Thanks, everybody.
Take care.
Peter, we miss you. We hope to have you back shortly, and go safe with God's abundant blessings, everybody. Have a great week.